mention North Korea, or Iran for that matter, and the conversation might turn to embargoes or nuclear weapons or political repression. Well, a restaurant in Pittsburgh is hoping to broaden the discourse and people's tastes at the same time. From member station WDUQ, Erica Barris takes us to Conflict Kitchen.
Hi, did you order a sandwich yet? One? Okay.
Don Walesky is leaning out a storefront window, talking about Iran, handing out sandwiches, and taking $5 bills. She's at Conflict Kitchen, a new takeout restaurant that only serves food from countries the United States is in conflict with. There's nowhere to sit, and the sole menu item is a sandwich from Iran.
And that's the only thing we're serving is kubida, which is a ground beef with sumac on top, with a little bit of parsley, basil, fresh mint, and onion, all wrapped in freshly baked Barbary bread.
Walesky is one of the co-creators of the restaurant. The eatery is experimental public artwork, with the sandwich wrap as the medium. Conflict is defined as anything from armed dispute to embargoes. They picked Iran because they knew people there, and Iranians in Pittsburgh. She says opening the restaurant added a layer of cultural diversity to the city. It's the only Iranian restaurant around. At the same time, though, they didn't want to alienate Pittsburghers.
We wanted to choose a food that was sort of the everyman's food, a food that you would find in the streets of Tehran, and everyone understands a sandwich. It's something that you can take with you. There's a little girl running by right now, skipping and eating her kubita sandwich at the same time. And a lot of people have said they feel like it's a Persian hamburger.
The entire experience is meant to spark conversation. The Conflict Kitchen's colorful exterior boasts Farsi words. The sandwich comes in a wrapper covered with information and perspectives from interviews with Iranians on everything from film to nuclear power to the green movement.
Pretty dull films.
Darren Christopher is a grad student. He came by with some friends.
Opposite sex cannot touch each other in films. Violence is not allowed, and you cannot make fun of any religion.
People have a negative image of a lot of countries based on the leadership in that country. And I think what they're doing here is promoting the idea that what's more important is the people and customs and culture and that sort of thing.
In a few months, the grant-funded restaurant will switch countries and cuisines. In September, it'll serve food from Afghanistan. After that, maybe Venezuela or North Korea. The proprietors themselves cook in the kitchen. Joni Perry works nearby. She's become a regular.
But you know, it's like, it's delicious. Every biteful, delightful. And it's just like smashing that stereotypical myth that because there's conflict in those countries and the terrorists, you know, and that's very realistic. It exists. But I don't let it stop me from buying good food.
Walesky says what most people know about the featured countries is through the media. To further the discussion, she'll host events such as live webcam meals with diners in Tehran. Alex Ward recently paid his second visit to the Conflict Kitchen. Between visits, he read up on Iranian culture, learning about religion and literature.
We have a lot more in common with Iran than I would have guessed.
Ultimately, though, he came back because he liked the food. For NPR News, I'm Erica Barris in Pittsburgh.
You're listening to All Things Considered.
If I knew you were coming, I'd bake a cake, bake a cake.
This July 4th weekend, the United States has a new constitution, a cake constitution.
We the people who love cake, in order to bake a more perfect dessert, reestablish the standard that true cake is baked from scratch, ensure the use of natural ingredients, provide for the common consumption of dessert in moderation, promote comfort foods, and secure the blessings of sharing dessert with friends and foe, do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United Cakes of America.
That's lawyer turned baker Warren Brown. In 2002, he gave up his career practicing law and opened Cake Love, a Washington, D.C. bakery guaranteed to tempt the senses.
People like dessert and cake so much that you can go crazy with different flavors, And they're gonna taste it, you know? I mean, you bring a cake into the room and everyone's gonna be happy.
But it really doesn't matter. Grab a chair and fill your platter and dig, dig, dig right in.
Since then, Warren Brown has opened 6 more bakeries in the D.C. area and has just released his second cookbook, The United Cakes of America. The book is a culinary tour full of delectable gâteaux for every state in the country. I visited his Cake Love Bakery at National Harbor on the Potomac River. While there, he showed me how to make his favorite dessert, the black walnut tort.
But what we're doing is just whipping our egg whites on high speed. When they get a really nice volume, not quite stiff peak, but a little bit more, a little bit up there, we'll slowly drizzle in the sugar, and then we're going to whip it until it really holds and becomes a little tighter. Then we'll add in our walnuts.
This cake is inspired from family vacations to Arkansas that Warren Brown took as a child, as well as the black walnuts that grow in Arkansas.
It's an unusual cake because it's got this meringue on top and then the butter cake. You got to slice that. It's a little bit of extra handling. And then this sour cream filling that is more like a custard than anything. So it's untraditional, unconventional.
As the black walnut tort was baking, I sat down with Warren and asked him how he decided on these really not very traditional and sometimes outright unconventional recipes in his book, The United Cakes of America.
I recognize that this is my take on it, and this is me saying, hey, this is how I think cakes are across the country. Sometimes it's choosing a cake that represents something about the state that people know, cherry trifle. So I use the cherry blossoms as really my inspiration. So sometimes it's a little bit of a loose interpretation I'll take. But others are very true to the state. Smith Island cake is from Maryland. That's the official state cake. For Massachusetts, it's the Boston cream pie. But I also took liberty. You know, I said, hey, Toll House cookies really originate from the Toll House Inn in Massachusetts. And I wanted to make a chocolate chip cookie cake because I just thought it'd be fun. One of the cakes to me that was really special and neat is the Tennessee stack cake. The cake part, the bread part, is really almost like a cookie, almost like a molasses cookie that you roll out as a dough, bake it, and it's real stiff. You could play Frisbee with it. And then the apples are dried apples that you reconstitute, and then they go between the layers. It's just two components going on, but you want to make it as tall as possible, bake it, and then wrap it up and store it in the fridge for at least a day. And everything just kind of comes together. And it tastes really good. And I was really just fascinated to learn about different people and different populations around the country and what they bake as a tradition.
So what if you haven't baked for a long time, and now we've whetted people's appetite, and they want to get your book or bake a cake? Any pieces of advice? We talked about how to whip a meringue, but if people are anxious about basic tasks, whether it be that or softening butter or sifting flour, I mean, anything you might add?
Yeah, nice tips and hints. One of the ways that I try to stay just nimble with stuff is baking scones. I like it because I rub the butter into the flour with my hands. Mm-hmm. And it's hard. It's not easy. But it's really a good way to stay in touch with the ingredients. There's a recipe for scones in here, even though it's a cake book, because I just love them. I needed to get that in there. But you got to weigh the flour, and I really recommend you weigh it with a scale instead of scooping and leveling. You'll just get an accurate read of how much flour you need for the recipe. Can't emphasize it enough.
And how do you think the cake itself compares to the trend for small finger food types of delicacies, pastries that we want to take away? I mean, you yourself sell
a lot of cupcakes.
Yeah.
We sell a lot of cupcakes, and I think that the cupcakes are great, but cake is too. You know, cake's never going to go away, and it's a great way for people to have a dessert. Sometimes it's really mobile, so you can take it, you know, on a picnic and stuff, and sometimes it's sitting there in the center of the room. So I think that cake still has a place, and it always will.
It's been a wonderful conversation. I'm really thinking about the black walnut tort. Do you think we could possibly have a slice together?
Absolutely. I want some, too. I do.
Sometimes I dust the sides with a little bit of confectioner sugar. And then I go to the party. You know?
And are the most popular man there.
Well, you know, it's like I love baking and I love cooking, and I don't want to spend it forever in the kitchen, you know? I mean, I want to sit down, too, and have some fun.
Yeah.
So, you know, I like to keep it as simple as possible, especially when it's a holiday.
Oh, dude.
Mm.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know, it's a whole dessert.
It's a different experience.
You got the nut crunch, mm-hmm. and then the sourness of the filling, the tang mm-hmm. of the mm-hmm. filling.
Happy 4th of July.
This is magnificent.
Thank you.
And you can see some of the cakes Warren Brown selected for the States in a photo gallery on our website, npr.org. Takes time and love to bake a cake. Those on deadline and maybe not feeling the love often turn to a less celebrated culinary institution, fast food. And for those even more hard-pressed, the fast food drive-through. A meal offered through the car window has been an option for residents of Baldwin Park, California, since 1948. That's the year In-N-Out Burger opened what it claims to be the nation's first ever drive-through food joint. Today, the town of 80,000 is served by 17 drive-through restaurants, and the city council has decided that those are quite enough. Baldwin Park is banning any new drive-thrus, for at least 9 months anyway. City council members are concerned about trans fats and those SUVs snaking from the parking lot into the street.
There's a long line of cars and they're trying to get through. There's no single explanation, there's no central destination. This long line of cars is trying to get through. And this long line of cars is all because of you.
And this is Weekend Edition, directed by Elaine Heinzman and produced by Sarah Byra-Kelly, Justine Cannon, Gemma Waters, Kimberly Adams, Lindsay Garrison, Theo Balcom, Connor Donovan, and Ryan Dunn. Our technical director is Burke Hun. Melissa Goh is our web producer. Our librarians are Key Molesky and Mary Glendenning. Our editors are Deborah George and Jeffrey Bennett. Our show was produced today by Peter Breslow. The senior editor is Jenny Burgle, and the senior producer of Weekend Edition is Bridget Kelly. And thanks to ESPN for their World Cup tape. I'm Jackie Leiden. Leanne Hansen comes back next week.
This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Jackie Leiden. For the last 20 years, Chef Susan Spicer's restaurant, Biona, has been rated one of the best in New Orleans. But its reputation for delicious and inventive seafood dishes is being threatened by the lasting effects of the Gulf oil spill. Last week, Friday, June the 25th, Chef Spicer filed a class action suit seeking damages, not just for her business, but for other New Orleans restaurants and seafood suppliers affected by the oil spill. Susan Spicer joins us from her restaurant, Biona, in New Orleans, Louisiana. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Jackie. I'm happy to be here today.
And also with us, famed chef Jose Andreas, and he joins us from his restaurant, Haleo, in Bethesda, Maryland. Thanks for being with us once more.
Thank you for inviting me.
Susan, let's begin with you. The oil spill in the Gulf has stretched beyond 70 days now. So please tell us what effect it's having on your business and that of other restaurants in your area.
At this particular time, right now, we're just starting to feel a little bit of a pinch as far as the availability of seafood is concerned. There are still fisheries open to the west of the Mississippi River, but oysters are virtually out of the picture right now because the beds were closed. Some of the beds have reopened, but a lot of the oyster fishermen are laying boom. They're being paid by BP to lay boom, and we're also not sure how the oysters that are available have been affected. We're still getting shrimp, but it's getting smaller and more expensive. But it's really not so much about what's happening today. It's the long-term effects that most concern me and my fellow restaurateurs.
So you filed this class action suit against BP, Transocean, Halliburton, the companies responsible for the down rig. What are you hoping to gain here?
Hoping to show that they were grossly negligent. And that's why, you know, a lot of people have asked why we didn't just file a claim, but there's not a claim process set up yet for restaurants in the tourism industry. So it's to make a statement, to stand with, you know, a lot of the smaller seafood restaurants and seafood-related industries that are going to be affected by this. Absolutely. Some are starting to be affected already, and many, many more, I feel, will be casualties of this disaster.
Now, we did call BP's Houston headquarters for a response, and a spokesman told us the company doesn't comment on individual legal cases. But are you hoping to continue serving the seafood?
Yes. The seafood is being rigorously tested, and what is being sold is safe and healthy to eat. And I will continue to buy from my local vendors, and I'll continue to stand by the product. It's the perception, I think, of a lot of the rest of the country that, you know, that everything coming out of the Gulf is tainted. And that is really not the case.
Jose Andreas, your restaurants in June participated in a nationwide effort to raise money to help people affected by the spill. What is your sense, in a culinary fashion, about this in terms of impact? Are restaurants changing their menus away from Gulf seafood?
I think it's all the contrary. We are trying to actually put as much as we can, if we can buy it. But I think the most important is to remind everyone that the most important source of energy is not gas. The most important source of energy is food, because food is what keeps us, the humans, with energy. So we need to start thinking about food as the most important source of energy, because it's the energy that keeps moving us, the people of America, the people of the world. And I'm only happy about what happened, only because I hope that we're going to start taking seriously where our food comes from, because right now, I don't think we do. Mm-hmm. And we need to start making sure that our politicians understand that the most important thing is our food, period, and food should be unnegotiable. Food is not only what keeps us moving, but food is lifestyle.
It's an economic engine,
It's economical engine. It's history. It's the DNA of who we are.
Exactly.
Because everyone is blaming BP, and believe me, they have a lot to be blamed, but it's a bigger talk. Mm-hmm. It's like, was BP, but could be any other company.
Right.
What are we going to be making? What are we going to do to make sure that in a place like the Gulf of Mexico, that is actually, we're talking food. In this case, it's seafood. But what are we going to be making to protect where the food comes from, to make sure that nothing like this will happen? In Spain, only 2-3 years ago, we had the same thing in the northern part of Spain, in Galicia. The same thing is the biggest producer of seafood in Spain, one of the biggest producers in Europe. We had an entire ship that broke in half. Oh, my God, was a disaster again. But this keep happening. And I think, like, my God, we need to start fixing and finding solutions to make sure that this never happens again.
Chef Jose Andreas joined us from his restaurant, Haleo, in Bethesda, Maryland. And Chef Susan Spicer joined us from her restaurant, Biona, in New Orleans. Thank you both very much for being with us.
Thank you, Jackie, and thank you, Jose.
Hey, best of luck, and let's keep working hard to make sure this never happens again.